Everybody, please take a breath in and exhale. That was an interesting start to that service this morning, wasn't it? And I want to thank God for it for a couple of reasons. It reminds us how much our sound booth has it all together most every other Sunday of the year. Amen? Thank you. Now you know what it'd be like without them. Secondly, it reminded me really of the coming of the Lord as a baby. It was messy. It wasn't all put together. And the greatest gift that we could ever imagine came to us. And I felt his presence while we were worshiping, and I thank God for that. Well, Liz, you ready to read?
Yep.
Now, this is a special passage today for both Liz and I. We're Luke chapter 1, verses 5 through 14. Why is it special?
Because it's the story of John the Baptist. And Elizabeth.
And Elizabeth, John and Elizabeth. So we're representing today. Luke chapter 1, verse 5 through 14.
In the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah, his wife. Abijah, his wife Elizabeth, was also a descendant of Aaron. Both of them were righteous in the sight of God, observing all the Lord's commands and decrees blamelessly. But they were childless because Elizabeth was not able to conceive, and they were both very old. Once when Zechariah's division was on duty and he was serving as priest before God, he was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. And when the time for the burning of incense came, all the assembled worshipers were praying outside. Then an angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing at the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, he was startled and was gripped with fear. But the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to call him John. He will be a joy and delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth."
Thank you, Liz. God bless you. One other thank you I need to do, and it's a thank you to you, the congregation, and it's a thank you to Paul Morris. We got a call last week of a family that lost their 21-year-old Down syndrome child. And the family is a part of a small house church, and they had no place to grieve when welcoming friends and so forth, and so they contacted us and asked if they could borrow this space. And I want you to know that you provided a beautiful space and a way for them to receive other family and friends and to receive some healing and comfort during that time. It would not have been possible if Paul wouldn't have taken off work early to turn on the lights and the microphones and everything else for us. But I just want you to know, when you had no idea what was going on, you were being a big blessing to a family. So thank you, Paul, and thank you, congregation. Our Advent series this year is titled Hopes and Fears. It comes from a Christmas carol, which I will quote a little later. On the evening of April 14th, 1865, John Wilkes Booth shot Abraham Lincoln in the back of the head, causing Lincoln to die the next day. Booth was a Confederate sympathizer. He had hopes. He had hopes that the South could preserve its culture, including the practice of slavery. Abraham Lincoln represented his fear that the North, after winning the Civil War, would end life as he knew it in the South. What was Booth's fear was the North's hope, and the hopes of the North and the fears of the South collided in Abraham Lincoln that fateful night of his assassination. The following day, Lincoln's body laid in state in the White House East Room, and long lines of grieving citizens walked by, mindful of their own hopes and fears. In a few days, Lincoln's body was placed on a horse-drawn hearse, and a procession was made throughout the city, Washington, D.C. The streets were lined with mourners. His body was eventually taken to the train station and placed on a special funeral train for a 1,600-mile journey to Springfield, Illinois. The slow journey lasted most of 2 weeks, with stops along the way, allowing people in different cities to pay their respects to their fallen president. One of those stops was Independence Hall in Philadelphia. A dense mob numbering about 1.5 million people lined up to pay their respects to Lincoln. Many were in tears. Many fainted because of the press of the crowd of people. In Philadelphia that day, a eulogy of the life of Lincoln was given. But it wasn't given at Independence Hall, where his body was. It was given about 13 blocks away from the pulpit of Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. And giving the eulogy was the church's prominent pastor, noted for his sermons and theological style, Reverend Philip Brooks. A dynamic preacher, while still in his 20s, Brooks had risen in prominence as he preached forcefully against slavery during the Civil War. He had hoped the war that would end this evil institution. His ministry also extended to African-American troops in nearby training camps. He advocated equal rights for freedmen and became active in the Union League, which was against slavery. It was after 4 years of civil war that Brooks movingly eulogized Abraham Lincoln and the soldiers who gave their lives. That eulogy had an extra personal meaning for him because the fallen included his brother, George, who died of typhoid while serving in the Union Army. The text that Liz read for us today is about a different story, a different collision of hopes and fears, the story of Elizabeth and John and Zechariah. Their hope used to be what most married folks hope for, especially in their day, the hope of children. In their day, to be childless was to live in shame, especially for the woman. The story the Bible gives us starts with the most basic of data about Zechariah and Elizabeth. Verse 5. In the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. His wife, Elizabeth, was also a descendant of Aaron. It's just basic. The story is taking place in the time of Herod, king of Judah. Zechariah was a priest. His wife had her own priestly ancestry. She was a descendant of Aaron, no less. Both of them, according to verse 6, were righteous in the sight of God, observing all the Lord's commands and decrees blamelessly. This couple came from good stock. They had no sin which could be blamed for their lack of fertility. They should have had every reason to have hope for children. But, according to the scripture, they were childless because Elizabeth was not able to conceive, and they were both very old. It wasn't bad pedigree. It wasn't unrighteousness. It was as random as a defect of nature combined with age that turned their hope into a fear. Have you ever held on to a hope year after year after year? It might have been, or it might still be, for love, or love again. Maybe it was for children, or at least maybe for another one. Instead of your hopes being fulfilled, instead of your cries being answered, year by year, did your hope begin to fade into the fear that it's just not going to happen for you? What do you do when hope has faded, and when what has been feared has finally been accepted as just the way apparently it's going to be? Well, what you do is you spend your life going through the motions. Verse 8. Once when Zechariah's division was on duty and he was serving as priest before God, he's just working, doing his job, what he's paid for. He was chosen by lot, another seemingly random thing, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and to burn incense. He's just doing the motions, what a priest does. And when the time for the burning of incense came, all the assembled worshipers were praying outside. They knew when it was their time to participate as well. And then, verse 11, then an angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing at the right side of the altar of incense. And when Zechariah saw him, he was startled and was gripped with fear. Finally, heaven's responding to old prayers, and Zechariah, instead of feeling hope and joy, he's gripped with fear. The heart that used to be full of hope is now full of fear. 13, but the angel said to him, do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to call him John. My wife will what? Remember, he's very old. And there's already a name picked out? The angel continued, he'll be a joy and a delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth. Is this real? Can what I hoped for possibly come to pass? Then the angel gave Zechariah instructions about the diet that his son would live by, and then described the nature of the powerful ministry he would have, like Elijah. And now Zechariah had a new fear. Is it true? Have you ever carried that fear around? Is what the Lord said to me true? Is his word true? Verse 18. Zechariah asked the angel, how can I be sure of this? I'm an old man and my wife is well along in years. Now I like this gentleman. He's willing to acknowledge, you know, what's obviously true. I'm an old man, but he speaks respectfully of his wife. She's well along in years. Now, I try to do that practice myself. I'm willing to say I'm an old man, but I wouldn't say that about Glenda. I would say, but this year she's eligible for Medicare. That's how I say it. See? See how that works? I can understand Zechariah's skepticism. Who would believe an elderly man saying, yeah, my wife's pregnant. He's delusional. He's finally lost it. I did notice recently he'd been forgetting a few things, and now he's making this claim. 19. The angel said to him, I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to tell you this good news. I'm old. It's okay. I'm Gabriel, and I stand in the presence of God. And now you will be silent and not able to speak until the day this happens, because you did not believe my words, which will come true at their appointed time. Don't you think Gabriel's a little harsh? Come on. You just scared an old man. What'd you do, paralyze his tongue? Did you make him have such a stuttering episode that he couldn't get a single word out? Have you ever been early in the loop of knowing that somebody's pregnant? And you know it before other people? And by the way, speaking of that, my daughter Kristen is pregnant. Some of you know, I know. It's going to be another girl, and I knew before you did. And I had to live for days and weeks knowing that information and not being given permission to tell. I would always first have to ask, do Mom and Dad know this yet? Do the siblings know? Yeah, they knew before you did. Can we tell the church yet? Imagine the situation of Zechariah. He has permission to tell, but his mouth is paralyzed. He doesn't have the ability. I just imagine when I was preparing this, him standing in the bathroom in front of the mirror and everything, trying to get his lips to work. Just so much excitement. I want to tell somebody, and they won't work. But eventually the day came, and John arrived. Verse 57, when it was time for Elizabeth to have her baby, she gave birth to a son. Her neighbors and relatives heard that the Lord had shown her great mercy, and they shared her joy. Hope that had been destroyed by what they feared most was now resurrected to great joy. And Zechariah was able to speak again and tell the good news, and his first words were praise to God. And I imagine his second words and third words, he was just running all over telling everybody what he couldn't say for the last 9 months. On the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child, and they were going to name him after his father, Zechariah. But his mother spoke up and said, no, he's going to be called John. I began with the story of Reverend Philip Brooks. His worst fear for his brother was experienced when his brother died. And now the man that he so admired, President Lincoln, and who'd done so much and sacrificed so much on behalf of the Union and on behalf of the enslaved in the South, lay dead and assassinated. Hopes were being threatened by fears. Within a couple of months of Lincoln's death, Reverend Brooks had occasion to spend some time in the Holy Land, about a year actually. And he was particularly affected one day by the sight of the smallness of the village of Bethlehem in light of how many hopes and fears had collided there in that tiny little town. One night even, he was outside where shepherds were, like in the story of old, and he saw shepherds tending their sheep just like they would have thousands of years ago. How could so much destiny, he thought, the center of all hopes and fears, converge in such a small, insignificant place? Like a seed, to Brooks, the image of the smallness of the place and the greatness of the history that flowed through that village was planted in him. It took about 3 years for the seed to germinate into a poem, but you'll recognize the words that he wrote. O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see you lie. Above your deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yet in thy dark street shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. The hopes and fears of all the years were met in a very small spot in the world that first Christmas night. Those hopes and fears had been anticipated by the hopes and fears of Zechariah and Elizabeth and the birth of John. The song says, the hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. Most immediately, Reverend Brooks was referring to a manger when he wrote where those hopes and fears met, a manger in Bethlehem. But great hopes and great fears still collide in the smallest of places. These collisions can be very dramatic. Gaza is 141 square miles in size. That's it. The United States is 3.8 million square miles in size. It's just a tiny little part of the world. The West Bank is of no great significance. Israel has 8,600 square miles. And in spite of the smallness of those places, all the hopes and all the fears for hostages and families are converging in that small place tonight. It applies to you and me as well. I have my own set of hopes and fears. Nothing as dramatic as what's going on in the Middle East, but I can tell I'm aging. I want my wife to be okay. She fought cancer last year. I have hopes and fears related to my children and grandchildren. Mostly hopes. I want my friend and sister Marcy to be okay. Hopes and fears of all the years are not what converge only in large consequential places like Gaza and Israel, or like even Bethlehem, which is famous. Yes, they converge there, but they also converge in you and your family and in me and in mine. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in you tonight, this morning. What were or are your hopes and fears? Maybe like Elizabeth, the years are passing you by. The hope of love or love again is fading. Maybe for you it was a pregnancy out of season, whether married or not. It feels desperate to you. Maybe there's shame, not ready for this, and fear grows. The questions you thought you'd never have to ask about abortion now urgently demand your answer. Our fears can be met with hope. Hope in the form of help from a loving community. Hope in the form of allowing a loving home to receive your child if that's what's best. Hope in the form of forgiveness and acceptance. Hope in the form of a baby that will grow up and be a blessing to you and to the world. Like Zechariah, maybe you would ask, how could I know that this would be true? Well, I am John, and I have been sent to speak to you and to tell you this good news. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in me and thee and in every one of us in our particular way today. And we can be afraid to hope and believe again and say, how can I be sure of this? I'm an old man, my wife's well along in years, or whatever would apply to your situation. And I come to remind us today from the Word of God that age and biology are not the last word. The word from heaven is, fear not. Live in hope. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in all of us tonight. I'm going to ask Glenda and whoever might else be coming today to be on our worship team, because part of our worship team couldn't be here today because of illness. So that's why I sound a little confused. And I want to shift gears because this is the first Sunday of the month. But before we do that, let's bow our heads.